Welcome to Deft Decisions in Chaotic Conditions, How Experts Create Order from Turmoil, the thought-provoking series on how to set, align, and implement priorities. Here's the host of our show, management consultant, speaker, educator, and president of Business Alignment Strategies, Pat Lynch.
Welcome. I am Pat Lynch, president of Business Alignment Strategies. I have as my guest today Caroline Loftus, who is with the organization Save the Children. She currently is the Associate Vice President of the Management Support Department International Programs for Save the Children, which is located in Westport, Connecticut. However, as of December 1st, she will be relocating to the UK and assuming a new position as Director of Operational Support for Global Programs. So, in addition to setting priorities for her work, Caroline is getting to practice these skills outside of work. So welcome, Caroline.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Let me just say before I ask you to introduce yourself a little bit is that the purpose of this interview is to allow people to get some insights into how to set priorities and how to assure that they are aligned with those of the organization. And in your case, I think, with the priorities of the agencies that you work with. So, Caroline, why don't you just tell us a little bit about Save the Children, a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into the questions.
Sure. Save the Children is a nonprofit organization founded about 75 years ago in the U.S. And actually, the U.S. entity was inspired by Eglantine Jebb's work in the U.K., which was the first Save the Children, working with children after the war on relief efforts. Today, we work in 50 countries, including the U.S., and SAVE is basically transforming children's lives by providing families and communities with the tools they need to break the cycle of poverty. It really is about empowerment. Our programs are centered on four pillars, help, education, protection, and livelihoods, and we work in both emergency and development contexts. I've been with the organization for 15 and a half years in a variety of roles, but usually in the management and operations end of things. Most of my time has actually been spent in the emergency area, and more recently in the last couple of years, I've transitioned into the development area. Right now, in my role as AVP for international programs, I manage a team of 15 people. The budget is somewhere around $1.5 million. And basically, I'm responsible for development and implementation of management systems and quality control for our programs in over 15 countries. And I think, you know, as I think about prioritization, we are fortunate enough at this time to have a five-year agency strategic plan that has been very well developed and very well communicated. We are all very clear on where we're going.
That's important in setting priorities, is it not?
It sure is. It's kind of difficult to set priorities if you don't really know where you're going. And I think, again, the organization really has matured, especially in the last 5 years, in terms of having the entire staff be involved in, to the degree that they should be, in strategic planning and ensuring that we do actually have direction from the top, we know where we're going, and then we are each assigned the responsibility to deliver on our respective areas.
But that wasn't always so, was it?
Definitely was not always so. Like I said, I've been here for 15 years. And in the early days, we actually did have a strategic plan, but it was a strategic plan that was developed in the Office of the President. So it really was developed in that small office, and it was shared with the rest of the organization. But, you know, the one thing that I've learned over the years is unless you really involve leaders in planning, it really is then a plan that sits on a shelf and you pull it out every now and again, as opposed to you feeling like you own it. I mean, I think ownership is really, really important in terms of prioritization and planning, and I have seen that really change the organization. We actually went a little bit too far, I think, in terms of involving as many of the staff as possible. We actually had a global summit 3 years ago now where we literally brought together 100 people from around the organization, country office leadership, headquarters leadership, and spent a lot of time really, you know, looking at the organization, where we've come from and where we want to go. And we actually spent 18 months doing that strategic plan, which I actually think is a little bit too long. However, I am seeing the results. I think development of the plan is important and development of priorities is important, but communicating them and re-communicating them regularly is what's most important. And if you walk around our building here in Westport, you will actually see the headlines of our strategic plan hanging on the wall. And if you ask staff, which again for me is you know, proof that it is actually working. If I go to the field and I talk to staff in country offices, they tell me what the priorities of the plan are.
Wow, that's great. So that truly is. People do own that.
Exactly. It's certainly a big change from where we were even, like I said, 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let us take a little closer look at some of these priorities. So can you give us an idea of, you know, the types of situations in which you find yourself needing to set priorities? And, you know, maybe talking a little bit about how you set them. I'm particularly interested in the process mm-hmm. by which the organization and you, you know, set priorities.
Yep. I guess the most recent example, just because it's very fresh in my mind, is our operational planning exercise for 2010. We just completed that about 3 weeks ago. And in terms of the actual process, again, we've got our strategic plan, so we know what the five-year plan is. Each year, guidance comes out centrally from the organization to tell us it's time to plan again for the next year, and that bite-sized one-year piece of the plan. And one thing we introduced this year, which I thought was really helpful, was the senior management team issued steers, what we call steers. So we have the strategic plan, but obviously things change, even in the 2 years that we've had since we developed the plan. So these steers are really designed to center the leaders of the organization in the five headlines for the SMT. Again, the economic situation has happened since we developed our strategic plan. We have also decided, it was almost at the same time as we finalized our strategic plan, we decided that we were actually going to merge the 27 Save the Children entities into one line-managed entity over the next several years. So that's obviously a huge change for us.
Yes.
So we got these steers from the senior management team, and then I actually have five teams that I work with. So what I like to do is I like to kind of give them the steers. We have an initial conversation about the plan for the next year, and then I task each leader with going and working with their team and coming up with their priorities. One thing about mission-based organizations, I think, as I think about the different tools for prioritization, we're very consensus-based. And I think, you know, as I think about the tool that's most commonly used in the organization, I think of the nominal group technique or the DOTS exercise. That really typifies how we come to consensus on priorities. So each team at that level does something like that and comes up with their list of priorities. The other thing about mission-based organizations, I think, is regardless of the resources that are available, it's very difficult to get people to take things off the plate. So people constantly want to overpromise and set ourselves up for under-delivering, which is a real issue. So for me, I get my direct reports lists of priorities, and we sit and we actually have a discussion, and we use filters like the overall direction for the organization, my personal bias of, you know, customer support to country offices, what's going on in the alliance, what are the resources that are available, and, you know, we really push each other to make those tough decisions and right-size what we're aiming to achieve in the given year. And I think the other thing is building in contingencies. We know that there's something going to happen in 2010 that we just have no idea of. Regardless of how much contingency planning we do, regardless of how much scenario planning we do, there's something going to happen, so just to make room for those contingencies. And then we wrap up our report, our operational plan, and it's shared not just with my team, but actually with the leaders of the entire organization.
Wow. Well, I like the term that you used when you said that we use filters, that we come together, you know, you come together with your teams and use these filters. And I was also kind of curious because what I understood you to say was that an example of a filter might be the overall direction of the organization, mm-hmm. and then you mentioned one that was your filter.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of wondering, how are those filters set? Because those seem to me to be criteria, really, yeah. by which the priorities are set. So could you talk a little bit about that, please?
Sure. And, I do think that there is a certain variability to how the leaders in the organization, certainly in this organization, do their planning, do their prioritization. I think it would be naive to think that people, including myself, would put together priorities without taking into consideration what my boss's priorities are. So I think we all bring something that, you know, two or three things that we're known for in the organization, and those filters, you know, frankly, I think my staff know me well enough to know what they are. But I do think it's very important to communicate those filters, because otherwise my team could go off in a direction that, you know, is just simply not going to work, because I feel strongly that, for instance, my team's priority needs to be servicing our country offices who are out there on the front line serving children. So I think it's a combination of individual leadership styles and organizational filters.
Okay. And then when you have those, then, you know, certainly if you begin with, this is the overall direction of the organization, we're checking everything against that. That will help to make sure that that your priorities are aligned with the organization's. I'm wondering, in terms of other departments, so you have your five teams, mm-hmm. how do you ensure that the priorities your teams come up with, you know, as your group, are
yep.
then aligned with those of others, especially now that you've grown?
Yeah, it is an issue, and to be honest, I think it's probably one of the issues we need to work more on.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, we have a limited time for doing our planning. What we try to do is, as I look at the priorities that we come up with in my team, I think about the areas this touches in the organization, and we try to have those bilateral conversations at the same time as those other departments are doing their planning, to make sure that if we have it in our plan and there's an interdependency with theirs, they're aware of it and they build it into their plan. There's not a centralized way of managing this, which is an issue. And I always find that in those last weeks when we're trying to put everything together, that is what falls off the plate, and I do think it's an area that we need to do more in.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, let me just, for people who are listening who may not know of the nominal group technique,
mm-hmm.
I should have gone, you know, should have asked you at that time.
Sure.
If you would just maybe explain or give an example and let people know what it is you're talking about, because my feeling is that people often are looking for a method in addition to process.
Yeah.
And so if you wouldn't mind, please.
Sure. As I think about this, the biggest DOTS exercise that I remember being involved in this organization, and I have been involved in many, was actually a prioritization exercise around systems building for the organization, and it was part of our five-year plan. So we have business leaders meeting with IT leaders to really determine what the priorities should be for systems investment for 5 years. And we all have the data. We have a list of, I think at the time, we had 69 projects that we thought were important if we put them all together.
Wow.
And we literally walked into a room where the walls were wallpapered with the priorities, and we had each business leader talk about their priorities vis-a-vis what was on the wall. We had IT talk about their priorities vis-a-vis what was on the wall. And there was a whole lot of analysis done in advance of this exercise. But at the end of a probably four-hour session, each leader in the organization was given a number of dots, and to be honest, I don't remember exactly how many there were, but we had to walk around the room and put the dots on the priorities that we felt strongly should be at the top. And I believe there were four colors at the time. I mean, I think there are different ways of doing this.
Right.
But in this case, there were four colors. You know, red was the first, blue was the second, green was the third, and yellow was the fourth. And those dots represented our prioritization of the objectives for systems building for our strategic plan. That data is then collated, and the list of priorities is ranked. And, you know, all the reds in terms of number ones, in most cases, it becomes very clear very quickly what the priorities of the organization are. And in this case, I mean, it was somewhat unanimous. So it was actually a very good exercise, I think, because we really did have our homework done in advance, and it was a lot easier. I think when you maybe have a DOTS exercise with a group that hasn't had a lot of time to digest the information, I think the answers are not as clear, or the priorities are not as clear.
Okay. And it seems, I mean, that's a great tool for organizations that do rely on consensus building. Because it is, I've used it before. It is a scientifically developed method,
mm-hmm.
and there are reasons, and I think those are great ideas that you gave about how to make that particular tool or that particular method work really well for you.
Yep.
And I think those are key.
Yep.
Well, good. Thank you.
Sure.
Now, taking that information and those priorities, well, first of all, let me ask you this. Maybe this is not a fair question, but we'll see. And by the way, I forgot to disclose. I meant to at the very beginning For those who are listening, Carolyn is my sister-in-law, and so I know that she is facing some challenges of her own in terms of moving her family from the U.S. to the U.K. for a couple of years as she takes this new position. So can you tell us how maybe you have used some of those prioritization skills in non-work situations?
Sure, and in full disclosure, I have to confess that I am not as good at doing this outside of work as I am at work, just so we're clear. So at the same time, actually, ironically, as we were doing our operational planning for 2010, I was negotiating my contract for this secondment to the UK. So it's actually been a little bit frustrating because, you know, these things take time. And so I've known for some time that I'm going to have all this work to do to actually logistically move my family, but I haven't actually had the green light to do that because we haven't finalized the contract. But I think in terms of prioritization, I mean, I have to confess, you know, once I did realize what was involved in terms of the logistics, I went through a period of a week or two where my head was full and I was joking that if I turned sideways, the information would fall out. But, you know, it really, again, I think I actually read an article maybe 3 or 4 months ago in the Harvard Business Review that talked about attention deficit trait, which is quite common these days in executive land. And I think that that's exactly how I felt. It was like I would start something, and then I would look over there, and there's something over there to be done. And I really did struggle with where do I start. And I think that I got some good advice, which basically was to take a step backwards and, you know, look at it from a fresh perspective, do something that had nothing to do with any of this and come back with a fresh perspective, which I really think is important, whether it's a work situation or a home situation, to take those steps back. And at that point, it's really a question of how do I manage what's going on at work? How do I manage my son who just started school at the same time? And how do I manage getting him ready for this move, as well as the logistics that are involved? And essentially, it's down for me personally to checklists. And what I did was I went online, and I do not like to reinvent the wheel, so I went online, a U.S. Person moving to the U.K., and I found a checklist from a very informative article online. And I literally put a plan together based on that checklist, and I'm working my way through my priorities. They have been prioritized in priority order, and I'm literally working through it, and I'm also seeking help from other people, which is something that, you know, if I didn't take that step back, I don't think I would have done.
Great.
So I'm much more in control these days, but it certainly didn't start out like that.
Okay. And I think that's important for people to be able to feel that even when they can't control everything, there are things they can control.
Right. Right.
Okay. Now, let me ask you, one of the things that you said, of course, you have responsibility for budget. As you know, and I'm sure that Save the Children is no different from other organizations in that sense, economic situations have changed and, you know, budgets have been cut in many organizations. People are being laid off or they're being furloughed. So do you have any suggestions or tips in terms of helping people implement priorities once they've been established and then, you know, given these circumstances?
Yeah, we've actually just literally, as all this was going on, endured a round of budget cuts that the organization chose to make. And I actually think it was an incredibly difficult process. And, you know, again, mission-based organizations really like to do as much as possible with as little as possible. But I really do think it was an incredibly valuable exercise for the organization, given the economic situation and given the alliance merger that we're planning. We really do need to constantly make those tweaks between now and when we merge our operations to make sure that we're using every dollar in the best way possible. And again, while it was incredibly tough, I found it to be an incredibly valuable exercise to be forced, literally, to take that operational plan that we had come up with and the resources we thought we were going to have and do another cut of, you know, okay, so now your budget has been reduced, and I don't remember what the numbers are, but it's been reduced by X percent. What are the things that you are not going to do in 2010? And can we talk about it as an international program area, that's the broad department that I work in, to make sure that what's getting cut over here isn't going to have an effect over there. So we really did actually have those conversations across international programs. And I think that there were a couple of things. One is making sure that leaders were empowered to, and this was communicated from leadership, empowered to make those cuts based on common criteria. So in terms of international programs, we came up with common criteria, and people were told that we had to take long-term cuts out of the system. I think, again, in a lot of nonprofit organizations, you know, we're used to budget cuts. They happen every now and again. And what happens is you cut your travel and you cut your other direct costs.
Right.
But you keep the long-term costs in the system. This really did force us, and we actually let 50 people go from the organization. And again, very, very tough decisions, but I think the right ones for the organization if we're to be fiscally responsible and prepare for this alliance merger.
Right, right. And it really does. I think, you know, like you, I view this situation that, you know, the country is in, that large parts of the world are in, to be an opportunity to really go back and say, what is our mission?
Yep.
And what are the things that we absolutely, that are mission critical?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which are important and which are things that, you know, maybe we got off the path because there was this bright, shiny thing over here and we
right.
could do it.
Right, exactly.
We don't need to do it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing I would say in terms of what needs to be in place for those things to be managed successfully is leadership. And I think that our leadership really over-communicated, which I don't think you can possibly do in these kinds of situations, but really we were communicated with on almost a weekly basis. We had Q&A sessions with the CEO and COO, where you know, tough questions and tough issues were raised. But I think that was really, really important for the organization because we, you know, they were just reinforcing again and again. They're tough decisions. We, you know, it's very painful, but it's very necessary. And I think that made a tremendous difference to those of us who actually had to do the cutting.
Now, to whom did the CEO and COO communicate? Was it down to a certain level of management, or were people throughout the organization part of that conversation, or those conversations?
Absolutely. There were all staff meetings and all staff messages that went out regularly, up to and including the CEO and COO sitting in a room the day that the employees who had to go were actually leaving the building with an open invitation to go and talk to them.
Wow.
I mean, it really, I just feel like we really did manage it quite well.
Yeah. Okay. How do you know? Going to another aspect here, how do you know if your priority setting process is working or how well it's working?
Yeah.
And when do you change it? I know that you have done a lot of work personally in, you know, measurement and really assessing the results that the organization is getting. So what can you tell us here about how do you know if the priorities are working?
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing is, and again, this is something that we've gotten better at over the years, the most important thing is your regular check-ins on progress against the plan. And we, in international programs, we actually have a quarterly report, and these are metrics that have been decided in advance that we evaluate on a quarterly basis to gauge our progress against our plan. And, you know, when you look at information over time, you can tell quite quickly whether or not you're actually making progress or you're not. And I think the other skill that we've really developed in leaders in the organization is situational agility. And I think that makes a tremendous difference, especially as we navigate all the changes that we're currently undergoing. So when we do our quarterly reports, we sit as a department, and I know this happens at the organizational level as well, to really evaluate what has transpired over the last quarter, what were our expectations, were they met or were they not met, and if yes, if they were met, or weren't met, why, and what are we going to do about it in the next quarter and going forward? And I think that really does make a tremendous difference. I think it also helps in terms of having employees who are clear on what is expected of them. It is so clear here. I mean, you just have to point to the department plan, the department report, to know what you're supposed to be doing and whether or not you're making progress against it. And I think, you know, if you look over time at these quarterly reports and the same objective is not being met, then you need to change it. You really need to do something about it and find out why and how critical. Obviously, it depends on how critical it is to the mission to make those changes.
Okay.
And I think the other thing is feedback. I'm a strong proponent of soliciting feedback from stakeholders, whether in country offices, in our operations, or other departments, to tell us how we're doing.
Okay. What something you said just kind of raised a question that I don't know if you can answer, but you know, let's just kind of put it out there. You use the term situational agility.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, because I'm thinking that if there are people listening to this thinking, well, you know, my organization is not very agile, and so this really doesn't matter for us. Do you think that the types of things that you, that your organization has done in terms of, you know, setting priorities and checking in on them is something that can be done regardless of, say, how bureaucratic an organization may be?
Absolutely. And I guess now is probably a good time to talk about what I've spent most of my time doing in terms of my work at Save the Children, which is emergency work. I think that situational agility, there's a wide spectrum, but it goes from everything from, you know, you talk about planning, and I've talked about a very centralized process for strategic planning in the organization. In the emergency area, we can't do that same level of planning. We've never been able to do that, and we probably never will. It's really about setting, you know, aspirational targets, things like let's be, you know, in the top three organizations responding for children in major emergencies. Let's make sure that we reach 10% of the community, 10% of the people in the countries in which we're working when there's a large emergency, those kinds of things. You can't actually get into the any level of detail in terms of geography or in terms of where the needs are going to be until the event actually happens. So I think, you know, situational agility is everything from those of us, now I'm working in the development area, who have time to plan, we do it very thoughtfully, and actually responding to emergencies affects the entire organization. So for me, if an emergency happens, that I have to be agile and make sure that whatever our priorities were, I free up the resources of the organization that I'm responsible for in support of that emergency and frankly put our long-term goals on hold. So I think it's just an incredibly important skill that really needs more attention, and not just in the nonprofit sector, obviously, but I think it's something that has really helped us as an organization get ready for this huge change that we're about to undergo in terms of unifying our operations as well.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, your point is well taken, and especially I'm thinking of clients I have and organizations that are facing really daily changes in terms of whether you have these employees, are they going to stay, are they going to go? There's some in the public sector, some organizations that are offering early retirement, and so people are going, and the people who are remaining saying, what do we do now? And,
absolutely.
You know, how do we regroup, really?
Right. And I think, again, that budget exercise was a good example for us of really coming up and challenging ourselves to come up with creative ways of actually delivering what we promised to deliver, but just in a much more cost-effective way. I think it makes a tremendous difference.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about, you know, setting or aligning or implementing priorities that you think would be helpful, or you know, any examples that you'd like to provide?
I think that, you know, leadership for me is absolutely key in terms of priority setting. I mean, I think if your leadership values and demonstrates and walks the walk in terms of priorities, it's a lot easier to get the rest of the organization in step. And I definitely have seen that in this organization. Making the tough choices, you know, it's something that, you know, again, we do have a ways to go on. And I think, you know, I look at the changes that we've made because of the budget cuts. We probably wouldn't have made those. And some of them were really, really good, and we should have made them anyway. But it did take that resource cut to actually get us to be that creative and that realistic in some respects in terms of right-sizing our aspirations for at least 2010. I think also tools, prioritization tools. I think they serve a purpose. They really do. They're necessary. I mean, we've obviously learned tools throughout the years, but they're only as good as the degree to which they're used consistently. I think the, you know, making decisions by the seat of your pants kind of thing. I mean, if you're not consistent, you're not going to have consistent results.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so very much for sharing your expertise. Again, my guest today is Caroline Loftus. She is with Save the Children. If you would like to learn more about her organization, you can find it on the web at www.savethechildren.org. Thank you, Caroline. I appreciate it.
And thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Deft Decisions in Chaotic Conditions, How Experts Create Order from Turmoil, brought to you by Business Alignment Strategies. If you would like to learn how you can ensure that your organization's people, programs, and processes are aligned with its goals, contact us at www.businessalignmentstrategies.com.